Hello and hi, welcome to the year-end review of 2021 for Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Noah Richman.
And I'm Darren Goldswig.
And we're just going to have fun this episode. We're just going to talk about the things that we saw or read or played that would make our 2021 lists things that we would recommend other people check out because we enjoyed them so much. And so, like, overall, how did you guys find your selections for 2021 entertainment?
Well, it was interesting because it was something that I've really been, particularly when it comes to watching TV and movies, I've very much been on a classics binge this year. I've just spent an awful lot of time going back, watching old classic film noir. And I was just thinking, oh, I'm completely behind on anything current. I really won't have anything to say. But once I sat down and actually started compiling a list, I realized, oh yeah, that's right. This did come out this year. This came out that year. And so I think there was more than I thought there was. Mm-hmm. I sort of had the thought that, well, you know, this is, and I think our sense of what came out this year may also be somewhat skewed by the pandemic and things that you wind up watching on TV and you didn't really see it in a theater. And so you don't really think of it as like, oh yeah, that was like this experience I had the past year. And of course we're talking about more than just movies and TV, but still. I guess my reaction is though, once I really kind of went back and looked it all over, there was actually a bit more that I could talk about than I initially thought I would have to say.
I'm kind of the same, but unfortunately, this 2021, I became more ingrained in gaming. Now, whether that because of the release of the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox One Series X, it kind of just, made that more obsessive for me. But yeah, I was really just got real down that rabbit hole of gaming. So it's been a wild ride. A lot of different variations, you know, whether it's old games, going backwards and playing, because Xbox has the backwards compatibility program right now. And it's been so great because a lot of them they upscale them with HDR and then, of course, 60 FPS, which has been great. So it's been great going back and because some of those classics still hold up. So.
And it's funny because I've been watching either screeners or Blu-rays for a lot of indie movies, indie sci-fi and indie horror, and even indie action that I kept whatever new that was coming out on Netflix. It's like, oh, I want to see Old Guard. Oh, I want to see Army of the Dead. I put them on my watch list. Never got back to watching them. So I'm like, oh, I'm behind on those movies, aren't I? Have to do something about that. But I think I watched more indie movies this year than I have in a while. And I went on a deep dive into a lot of graphic novels. I guess, you know, part of me missed comics and I kept hearing about all these good comic series and I'm like, no, I'm not buying floppies anymore. I don't do that anymore. Don't tempt me. Wait, you're doing graphic novel collections? Tell me more. So these compilations of, you know, 4-issue, 5-issue, 6 issues of the floppies come out and I really, really got into several of them. And I think I'm done reading comics as monthly singles. And if I had my way, I'd, you know, want the comics publishers, either the big ones or the indie ones, when a book comes out, give me an option to pre-order that 6-issue graphic novel. I want to let you know I'm interested in this title, but I'm not buying that monthly comic. It doesn't make sense for me from a financial or storage space perspective. So that's my get off my genre lawn moment.
Well, what about the, have you done the digital thing where you can like subscribe and look at some of the legacy stuff?
I am not a fan of digital comics from a reader's perspective. From an accessibility perspective, I love that some of these old titles that I wasn't able to get before are out there. I love that people who had wanted to get these copies can get them. My iPad isn't big enough for me to enjoy the art. And sliding left and right and up and down, no, don't like it.
I share the same. The closest that I've bought those books where they're usually like combined, where they take, like, for example, I bought Nova, the original series Nova, and it was all combined into one big book. And albeit it was black and white, of course, but I was able to go back and reread some of it, which they weren't as good as I remember them.
So I am going to say this about reading comics on your iPad, which is what I do predominantly. The iPad itself isn't really big enough if you're reading the whole page, but the comic readers generally have an option where you double click into it and then each frame expands and takes up the entire screen. And then you just flip from frame to frame. That's how I read them. And so it actually gives you a bigger, get more real estate than reading a paper.
Well, for me, it's the smell. It's the feeling. I don't know. I miss back in the day when you get those comic books and it would be in that little brown wrapper, you know, and you're always hoping that it wasn't beat up because, you know, it would be sent to the mail and you would pull it out and it would just like open. You would just that smell. And if they went to a Baxter paper and then that had a different, I don't know, it's kind of sounding weird, but you know, I think anybody who's been a comic book collector back in the day probably understands what I'm saying.
No,
you know,
I remember there was a big thing because the original comics when we were kids, it was on newsprint and it had a certain feel. The paper had a certain feel, a certain smell to it. And then they started going to the magazine paper or the glossy paper, and it was so different. And the glossy paper was cool for a while because you didn't, you know, the ink didn't smear off on your thumb like it did from the newsprint. But having that glossy page, it didn't pull you in as deeply. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I remember one time it was the ROM. You remember ROM, the knight? The space knight. They actually made a mistake and they put two of them in the same binder, the you know, thing. And I was like, oh my God, I actually got two extra comics. It's those little moments, you know, but yeah, I miss that. I will forever miss that.
Yeah. But like I said. I enjoy having the accessibility and bookshelf ability of the graphic novels. And I don't think I'm ever gonna lose that.
But for me, what's chased me away from any of the newer stuff is that they seem to have like taken a big shit on the legacies or the stories, and it's like they've run out of ideas and they just, I don't know, instead of creating whole new characters or avenues, they seems like they're just busy destroying the ones that we've already got or repurposing them with a new ideology or whatever. But you know what, not to sound like, you know, get off my grass, but I quit reading them a long time ago. Number one, because they just got too expensive. It kind of started with the mutants. I mean, there was just so many of them, I could not keep up. I was like, okay, I got to buy all these, and they would like spread it over the issues, and you would have to spend all this money just to keep up with everything, which was done by design, obviously, because Marvel is just about the dollar. So,
Yeah, the expansion, the seemingly never ending expansion of the X-Men pantheon is why I stopped collecting comics. At one time I'd looked and I was collecting 12 different mutant related books. I had X-Men, X-Factor, New Mutants, Alpha Flight, and like the four others who I can't even recall now, plus the 4-issue and 6-issue miniseries. I love those miniseries.
What about Excalibur? Remember that one?
Yes, I did.
That was pretty good.
I had Excalibur. What was the British one?
That was with God.
Was that X Factor or X Force?
I can't remember. I only had one or two because that's when I was gonna checking out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I realized, I'm like, okay, I have 12 books here. They're all X related, and no, I can't do this anymore. I literally stopped cold turkey. But when you said you weren't happy with how the storylines and the characters are being retconned and changed, it made me realize I haven't read a Marvel or DC book in ages. And even with my love of the characters from before, with my enjoyment of the movies when they started up, I have not gone back to the comic books. And I've heard that some people are doing some amazing writing. There's a new Black Panther storyline starting up with John Ridley that I hear is supposed to be amazing. Brian Edward Hill did a Batman storyline this year that was apparently amazing. And I want to support those guys as writers. Ta-Nehisi Coates did Black Panther a few years ago. I never went and got him because I did not want to collect the comics anymore, if that makes any sense. And I wish there was a better way for me to support the work they're doing and without actually buying monthly comics and, you know, perpetuating a cycle that I don't think benefits anybody anymore. But that could just be me.
So I guess I'm curious, just to bring it back to 2021, then, mm-hmm. what you said, you have kind of been into reading comics and graphic novels this mm-hmm. year. Was there anything that you read that came out this year that's worth mentioning that, you know, that stood out to you?
Yeah. Ever since Porter of Earth came out, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years, I've been following some of the work that Zach Kaplan has done. They did a one-shot this year called Join the Future. And I will actually read the description here. Ultra-modern megacities reward millions of their citizens with a completely funded life, with every need met from food to housing and healthcare in order to compete in an economic power struggle in which population is key. But a few rural residents still cling to their independence in the last American small towns left. When a nearby megacity pressures the people of a small town to join up or else, a teenage girl named Clementine Libby will learn how far she'll go to defend her principles. And it's a one-time thing. I think the early issues came out in the end of 2020, but the collected 5 issues graphic novel came out this year. It's from Aftershock Comics called Join the Future, and it's delightful. Another one that I started reading was called 7 Secrets. That's from Boom Studios. Sarah and the Royal Stars came out from Vault Comics. Vault Comics has a lot of stuff. They're still doing the monthly thing, but, you know, I wait for the collections. You know, they'll either do issues 1 through 5 or issues 1 through 6 of a collection that comes out. There's another series. It's an ongoing series. I think they're up to volume 6 now in the graphic novels called Monstrous by, I think it's Marjorie Liu, I think.
Uh-huh.
But all of these independent publishers are putting out stories that, you know, they don't go on for 20 years. They go on for 6 issues, 5 issues, 6 issues, 8 issues, 12 issues, and they're done. Like Sarah and the Royal Stars, I believe, was 2 collections of 6 issues each. And it's it. That's it. That's the story. I don't have to worry about, you know, 24 more single issues. They're done.
Well, in comic books, you know, if you think about it, the kind of continuation was like a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
That was just kind of never ending. And so I think those days are kind of gone anyway. You know, it is interesting how the market, and you talk about independent, and now you have a lot of people that are doing crowdfunding
mm-hmm.
to try to generate money so they can publish their own work. I think that's kind of cool and more of the kind of wave of the future in a lot of ways.
And that's one of the reasons I love Vault, because they do a lot of creator-owned stories. Mm-hmm. And I want to see where that takes off. And I'm still waiting to see what news happens from, because I think both Marvel and DC left Diamond to distribute their own stuff themselves.
That should have been done a long time ago, too, by the way.
But they're still sticking to the same publishing model. I'm like, you just kicked Diamond to the curb. Let it all go.
Well, they probably have some people that are still in positions of you know, deciding, and that are making the same mistakes, you know. So, besides, they're trying to compete against manga right now, and who's kicking the mm-hmm. crap out of anything from America right now. I mean, if you look at the top 20, it's always books from, you know, Japan or Korea.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll bring up the one thing that I can say, because as with movies, most of the stuff I've been reading this year for graphic novels has been more, you know, classic stuff like, you know, old EC comics and things mm-hmm. like that. But one thing that I did read where at least the graphic novel came out in 2021 was The Scumbag from Image Comics. And that was a pretty entertaining one. He's this like drug addicted biker who accidentally winds up injecting himself with this, you know, he's trying to do it to get high, but he winds up injecting himself with this serum that gives him superpowers. and so the agency that had developed the serum that intended to give it to somebody to be like a superpowered spy for them, like they now they're forced to use him. But he's like the world's worst human being.
Oh my God. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like Chuck, but if Chuck was a crackhead.
Yes.
Well, what turned you onto that, Noah? I mean, is it just word of mouth or?
I was talking to a guy. Well, I guess I'll be completely candid. I was talking to a guy at a bar also happened to work at one of the local comic book stores. And so we were talking comic books, and I was asking if, you know, what's good that's out right now. And this was something that he'd recommended. So I'd have to say it was definitely entertaining. I mean, it's
nice.
Kind of gross humor, but it's entertaining, you know?
Well, it just... You know, and for me, I distinctly remember this when I was collecting comics back in the day, that the change in the market when you had the like Image and, you know, because when I was growing up, it was always like you had Charlton as the additional, the alternative to DC and Marvel. But that was like the cheap, you know, the things that you would never, but then all of a sudden, you know, Ninja Mutant Turtles came out. You had Miami Mice. I don't know if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm. I do. I do.
That was, and then Miracle Man actually was by Alan Moore was a great, great series.
Right.
And so, but anyway, it was like all these publishers that were like going against the big two. And it just seemed like a lot of like independent artists were going on their own way, and Pacific Comics with Jack Kirby, you know, and I just, I was hoping that was going to be the norm, but you know, just, I think it fizzled out. Like, how many of those are still around, you know?
EC is in a revival state.
Really?
Uh-huh. Mm. I was just talking to the guys who, there's a Vault of Horror podcast, and they were going through all the stories of all the original EC comics, but they're also doing something with republishing the original EC comics.
I've always,
for that matter, I think I read something recently about Hammer is coming out with like some new Hammer horror films, but they're also trying to bring the old ones back, in new 4K or whatever.
That's that, and again, that's unfortunately to a lot of the newer generation, they don't have the same connection that people in our era do. And they would probably look at it like, oh my God, that's stupid. You know, hey,
I used to own the Witches on Laserdisc, like the original Hammer one. So,
well, and with Plummer just passing away last year, I mean, he was kind of the spokesman for a lot of that stuff. Wasn't he a lot of those Hammer movies? That's Lee. That was Lee.
Oh, Christopher Lee. Really,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was...
God, I know you maybe you piqued my interest because, you know, I haven't seen a Hammer in so long. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Yep. What new movies or home video discs or streaming did you guys?
I was going to say, so I guess one segue we could make in terms of, we were talking about comics and indie comics and, so something that the comic is certainly hardly 2021, but the series is I did just finish watching Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely an interesting one. I have to say I was a little disappointed with the reveal at the end turning out to be not as much of a reveal as one would hope. but I thought overall it was actually extremely well done. I think it's lived up to the hype of being a solid superhero animation. it's one where I had started reading the comic at one point and kind of was, you know, it's like, oh, it's all right. Maybe I need to read further. And I just didn't get that into it. Whereas like the animation, I really got very sucked in. And once I started watching, I had a hard time stopping.
And that one's on Hulu, right?
It's on Prime.
Ah, okay.
On Amazon. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I actually, like, I haven't watched a lot of new content, but I like Noah. I mean, I did go back in the last couple months and rewatched Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I still, that first series, or first year, and Daredevil series are still my favorite ones. But I just loved Mike Coulter as Luke, man. He's so, I just wish they would bring that into a movie format. And of course, they just announced that for Daredevil, they're actually going to revisit him. And also the actor, which, I forget his name.
Charlie Cox.
So, yeah. And he's been playing that for a while. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, great. Now maybe they can bring Luke in too.
It's entirely possible because somebody was saying that Kingpin should appear in a Spidey movie. And they've already said that Charlie Cox's Daredevil does appear in the new Spider-Man movie. They're denying it, but he's supposedly in it. So,
well, and the thing that still pisses me off the way Luke is the first six episodes where they had Cottonmouth and then they just killed him off. Ali, the actor, he was so freaking amazing. He's one of my favorite actors. But, and then of course, when they came in with, what was it, Copperhead, that the actor, he was just so campy and just, you could just tell the weight of the, it was just
that the storytelling, the direction, the emotional investment went away.
Oh my!
Spoiler alert: Cottonmouth.
Yeah, sorry. Let me do that.
It's been 4 years, 5 years. People.
Yeah, you know, I know.
Come on, man. It's like saying, you know, who survived at the end of Jaws? Guess what? You know, it's 40 years. There's no more such thing as a spoiler on that anymore. That Luke Cage first season was stunning storytelling.
The one thing I didn't like about it, and I think Noah and I would both agree with it, was when there was the one scene where he looks at himself in that like outfit, like he was kind of campy, and he like laughs at it. And it was almost like laughing at the idea of costumes. And I thought, well, geez, that's kind of like the whole point of having.
Yeah. Well, what it was it was like the you know, the headband that he wears and in the comic, like,
yeah, and he had the little crown, yellow,
like it's kind of like a crown and whatever. And you see him put it like he has it on his head and he looks in a mirror and he goes, nah, and he takes it off his head and tosses it. And that was just like, you know, that is such a middle finger to like everybody that was a fan of that.
I thought it was funny because that was something that they were forcing him to wear when he was a prisoner. So he's like, you know, do I keep it? Do I let it go? Nah.
I get it. It's just knowing the backstory of the showrunner and how he felt about, you know, costumes and all. But here's my point to all this, though. I'm kind of super caped out. I'm like, superhero movies, I'm just kind of done. Like, for me, I'm just so fatigued. I haven't watched, but there was something erroneous about those that I really, and I love the casting of the actors that they played, you know, that still like feel want to go back and watch. I just don't feel that way.
I think there is one superhero movie from 2021 that we could all talk about. And that was the Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was gratuitous. but I was almost like him poking fun at the whole idea of it. You know what I mean?
Are we talking the Suicide Squad now?
Yeah. The whole, how overly violent it was. It was like, okay, now he's just having fun with it. I love that movie. Obviously, we talked about it, but in fact, I saw it a couple times. Are you going to watch the series that it's like that's supposed to be?
The HBO one.
Mm-hmm. With Cena, whatever name is, he's supposed to be in there too. So,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would say I don't feel strongly enough about it to sign up for HBO. You know, just like that in itself isn't gonna get me to sign up. But maybe at some point when something else does inspire me to sign up, I may binge that. In the meantime,
the problem with that was the character in that movie. He looked, I don't know if you remember this, back in the day, they had these toys, G.I. Joes, and they had this one character called Bullet Man. And he had a helmet that looked just like him. And so when I first saw the teaser, I'm like, oh my God, they're bringing Bullet Man into this, you know, cause what do I, so, but every time I see his costume, that's the only thing I can think of is this obscure toy that came out.
And that's, you know, that's what's hilarious to me. I actually enjoyed the first Suicide Squad, but I had no desire, no, you know, undeniable urge to run out and go see the new one. I'm like, I just saw this movie 3-4 years ago. Why am I getting a new one? And
it was fun. I didn't have fun with the first one.
I understand it's fun. I mean, I heard that the Harley Quinn movies are fun too, but I'm not that into her as a character. You know?
Yeah.
It's I'm the same like way with you.
Yeah. I'm Joker and Harley. just the two most overdone characters in fandom.
And like for me, I haven't seen any movies in the theater this year. I am inclined to watch Snake Eyes, and I think I'm going to order Shang-Chi just because. But other than that, I honestly can't think of anything that was any superhero movie actually that was destined for the theater that I felt the need to run out and go see in the theater. And it's becoming more and more common. And I worry if, you know, is Hollywood paying attention to this? Because people are either burned out with or bored with these movies and they're not taking the hints.
Well, look at me. I'm a lifelong comic book. Well, you know, not including the last couple of years, but, and for me to just not even care, that's pretty staggering. Cause lots of money was flowing from my hands for many, many years to watch this stuff. And now I just don't even care.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, X-Men was the first series I fell in love with. And then right after that was Daredevil. And to be ambivalent towards the last two, what was it, Dark Phoenix and New Mutants that came out? Mm-hmm. I loved the New Mutants. I was reading them from issue number one. And I had no urgent need to go see the New Mutants movie.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything.
And, I also loved Alpha Flight. And I hear that they're talking about maybe making an Alpha Flight movie either for was it Disney Plus or for the theater? And I'm like, still not enough to make me go buy Disney Plus. I'm sorry.
and if they play Puck, who's going to play Puck the way they're supposed to look? Mm. And then Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Alpha Flight, man. But I just can't see they could represent that the right way. Yeah. Not with the exorbitant amount of money and CGI.
Yeah. I think about it. 20 years ago, Hugh Jackman should have been Puck. If you think about it.
Yeah, but you need to play a guy who's like, he's a little short and stocky and like, just, I don't know. I just loved him. He was like a small version of Wolverine, you know?
Yeah, he was. But who's the guy's name? It's not Stephen Flynn. There's an actor who facially resembles Peter Dinklage, but he's not, he's short, but he's not dwarfism short. And I can't remember his name. It's bugging me now. But he could have, like I said, 15 years ago, he could have been a good Puck too.
Yeah. And like, that's, are they really a recognizable name, just with common, like a household name? I mean, you say X-Men to most people, they like at least know what that is. Mm-hmm. Alpha Flight, they have no idea. I mean, it's a Canadian superhero. Oh, okay.
It's the Canadian X-Men, okay?
Well, like I remember reading Captain Canuck when it was an independent, it was from Canada, thinking, oh, this is really cool, So you don't think about comic books with Canada, at least I never did. But
so I guess I will say, as far as, with comic book movies this year, I did enjoy Shang-Chi, but I think I came to it with the benefit of not, knowing the canon behind it. And so just taking it fresh for what it was, I enjoyed it. I did think I found the first part of it a bit stronger than the second part. I thought it went on a bit longer than it needed to, but I did actually really enjoy Shang-Chi. And another one I really didn't have any interest in, and I didn't go to see it in the theater, and I kind of didn't really care that much, but once I finally caught it on TV, I was surprised to find that I actually did enjoy Black Widow. Even though I heard a lot of lukewarm response and reviews about it, it was definitely like, it's a formula Marvel film that you have to take it for what it is, but I found it enjoyable. I put it on and I didn't have much expectation for it, and by the time it was over, I was like, it was fun. I enjoyed that. It was a good time.
Well, how about other movies in the sci-fi and horror realm that you may have caught, like non-superhero movies?
Right. Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is Godzilla versus Kong, which is not, you know, too far removed from superhero, but
Kaiju count. Kaiju count. They're their own little separate niche.
Yeah. And that was really fun. You know, for me, I would put that in some of my best of 2021. It was mindless. It was dumb, but it was, you know, it was along kind of like what Darren had to say about the Suicide Squad. Like, you know, it was just having fun with what it was. It knew what it was and it wasn't pretending to be anything else. And as such, it just wound up being a good time. You know, it succeeded in just having fun with being what it was. I know that Darren, you managed to catch Dune, which is something I still haven't seen.
Visually, I was, now granted, when I saw it on HBO Max, and I just remember thinking, why am I wasting my time watching it on my iPad? Because when you see it, it's just, and it was really, the pacing of it was really well. When you, especially when you watch it compared to the original Lynch movie, and just conveying these, because it's a deep story, and it, you know, it was really well. Just even looking at the sequences compared to the original one, everything is just, it doesn't feel cheap, and everything is like, in layman terms, you can like follow along. Like I remember watching it at the theater, they actually gave you a little pamphlet to discuss who each character was. And
wow,
you're talking about the first one.
Yeah, as a kid, and that's how you know confusing it was, but. It was brilliant the way it was visually shot. Just it was lots of blacks, man. So when you watch again on the iPad, it doesn't really like stand out the way. And the one thing I loved about it, and again for me, each environment they shot in, there was like the sound design really matched, and it created this unsettling vibe underneath it. And so when you listen with headphones on, because I don't know if you ever listen when you watch movies to when you watch them, and there's like really good sound design, each environment has its own unique white noise and design and sound in the background, and when it's done correctly, it creates this subliminal vibe going on behind it. And I just, it was well done, man. It was like a lot of thought put into that, and so without going through, I mean, if anybody's not familiar with the story, but it's you could take the spice and you could replace it with oil today, and it's relatable. So it's got this story that can be relatable to anything. So I don't know, I enjoyed it. I just wish I had seen it on the big screen. I would say
keep your eye out for holiday screenings, especially screenings, because somebody announced a Dune in the theaters again thing, and I can't remember where or when, but they were putting some of the bigger movies back on the big screen for the holidays.
You know, and for me, like, okay, Oscar Isaac, he's kind of getting like the overexposed thing, kind of like Rock. But actually, Oscar Isaac is one of my favorite. He's a freaking amazing actor. And I thought at first, I'm like, oh, okay, here's Oscar, you know, Oscar again. But he does so well in his role, like he always does, that at that point, I just wasn't like, okay, that's Oscar, you know, but. It's just interesting that the choices and the casting of all the actors was, I think, well fleshed out, more so when you look at the original, like, you know, Sting in the previous was just, it's like, oh, that's Sting trying to be an actor. And I don't know. It just, because I watched it recently, the original, and it just feels cheap and just, you know, didn't age well, especially with a lot of the effects. It's obviously it didn't hold up, man.
If you really want to add another dimension to the visual adaptations of Dune, check out the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yes, I've seen it. I
saw it actually in the theaters when it came out. It was, and I finally got around to getting it on Blu-ray last year. But just the idea of of Alejandro Jodorowsky doing Dune. In 1975 is amazing, because if that movie had gotten made with all the Giger artwork, with how expansive his notes and everything were, Star Wars wouldn't have had a chance. But it's a very informative documentary. So if you want the complete Dune picture, go see that. You know, see that one, then see Lynch's, and then see Villeneuve's.
I just like the way I like his stylish. Like he's just really modern, but not. You know what I mean? He has lots of long shots, and just something you don't see a lot of, with directors. So I don't know. I was definitely, it wasn't on my list of things I needed to see. So that's why I didn't see it at the theater, but I actually enjoyed it, you know, so looking forward to the sequel. But you know, and it's funny going back and looking at 2021, what did I see? What did I watch? It's like I mentioned at the head, I eventually spent most of my time just gaming, but I will say this, a lot of cinematic moments in my gaming experiences.
We shall talk about that in a little bit. I want to get to some of the stuff that I made note of this year. There was several indie sci-fi, several horror comedies, and you know how much I hate comedy in general, but a couple of horror comedies that really amused me in a good way, and some other indie films that people should go check out. Psycho Goreman is ridiculous in the extreme. It even has a 1980s musical montage in the middle of it. Storyline is a little girl who's borderline sociopathic, and her little brother find an artifact that lets her control an intergalactic supervillain who has been buried on Earth to keep the galaxy safe from him. And shenanigans ensue. Jacob's wife is one. Barbara Crampton should get awards for that role.
Tell us a little more about what was it that you liked about Jacob's wife?
It started out as a story about a woman searching, she's a housewife. She's a wife of a pastor, and she's just going through the day to day, and that's her identity. She's Jacob's wife. She doesn't have her own identity. She doesn't have her own separate self in the eyes of the community, and she's losing herself little bit by little bit by little bit until she gets bitten by a vampire. And instead of dying, she kind of gets turned. It was an accident, but she starts asserting herself as, you know, it's sort of like in, you know, a middle-aged women's empowerment film, but still things happen where her agency is taken away from her, even when she's fighting for her survival against the master. And she actually snaps towards the end going, "You took that away from me." Like, that was her moment, and it was snatched away by, you know, men. And it was just the underlying theme of discovery and empowerment in the midst of these vampires trying to, you know, invade this town is hilarious. But it's a really, really good story.
Did you see Freaky by chance? Because you're talking horror comedy.
I did not see Freaky. That's the Switch one, right?
Yeah, with Vince Vaughn.
I it's on my list of things to see. It's not on Netflix yet, and I'm kind of annoyed by that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I have the DVD out.
Nice.
From the library at the moment. I haven't watched it yet.
It's like Freaky Friday with a
serial killer.
Yeah, it's like a butcher. it's just
I admire Vince Vaughn's physical comedy, but I had never seen him in a movie where it was something I wanted to watch. You know, I'm not a straight up comedy. I'm not a straight up, you know, I hate rom-coms with a fiery hot rage. But seeing Freaky, I'm like, okay, horror comedy, I could do that maybe. But I haven't seen it yet. Have you guys seen Werewolves Within yet?
Mm-mm. Yeah, I saw that on the airplane on, my way home from New York City.
That was unexpected. I did not expect them to go that direction with that movie, but having a park ranger assigned to a new, very, very remote town, stumble into the middle of some unexplained deaths, brutal, bloody, violent deaths. And in order to save themselves from the attack, a bunch of the townspeople end up locked in a bed and breakfast overnight. And that just makes things worse. And it's hilarious. The paranoia, the brutality, surprising brutality of the deaths, and the way the ranger, Sam, I think his name was Sam. I think his real name is Sam. I don't remember now. Is just, he's just gosh darn it the whole way through. That just makes it funnier.
So is that on your list? Was that on your list? Okay.
That is. Yeah. That is.
Yeah. See, my recollection from watching it, I did like the main character, and there was sort of a kind of a fun twist at the end.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I like the idea of the way they try and populate this rural town with these weird eclectic characters, but somehow the execution didn't quite work for me. Like I found them, you can see they're trying to do something funny and quirky. And yet to me, it came off as a little more just annoying rather than actually amusing me.
I remember correctly, most of the actors were professional comedians.
Ah, interesting.
Yep, that was it. Other not so comedic movies that I liked, The Boy Behind the Door is an abduction story. It's very atmospheric, it's very tense. One boy gets kidnapped, and he's about to become one of many other boys who have gone missing in that area over the years. But his best friend, who was with him when he got kidnapped, he was going to be left behind and killed, but he escaped. And his mission is to try to free his best friend. So he's sneaking around this house that has a child predator in there. And he's running back and forth, hiding in this house, trying to find out which room they've locked his friend in so they can try to both get out. And the tension in there is really, really well done. The next movie I saw was Initiation, which is the first horror movie I've seen in a long time that manages to incorporate cell phone technology and the normal way people use it these days with social media and texting and calling and, you know, dealing with areas where signal drops out and using the light on the phone as a way to light your, you know, when the lights go out in the building kind of thing. Is really, really well done. It's set on a college campus and there's a killer hunting down certain students for payback, and you don't find out what the entire real story is until the very end, and the surprise is like, oh shit, really? And I really like that one. What do I have on my list? I have two more. One is a supernatural thriller called Witch Hunt. And if you imagine the concentration camp setup, only it's instead of the government hunting and capturing and corralling illegal immigrants, they are hunting down women who display witchcraft ability and preventing them from escaping the country.
That because sounds a little too close to the
Fact that it was made when I actually talked to the director writer and she's like, yeah, that kind of hit closer than we intended, didn't it? But I think that was the point. But the way the magic, the girls who are witches, who have embraced their power and are trying to escape, they're literally trying to get to Mexico where they'll be safe as practicing witches. And I'm like, something like the one thing that doesn't make any sense is why wouldn't the government be trying to capture these women and use their power? Because Motherland Fort Salem is doing exactly that. But, you know, it's a different story for a slightly different time. But I really liked Witch Hunt. And if you're into sci-fi romances, the movie to check out is Needle in a Time Stack, which is based off of a Robert Silverberg short story. And that movie is so beautiful. And I'm, like I said, I'm not a fan of romances. I'm not a fan of rom-coms. This is not a rom-com by any chance, but it is a romantic time travel movie.
Like Somewhere in Time? Like Somewhere in Time style? Or
sort of. In this movie, time travel to the past can be had if you have the money. So basically, rich people travel back in time to watch stuff. Sometimes they are warned against changing the past, but apparently these waves that just crash through reality are a common occurrence. People are prepared for them because they change. Something in the past change, and it waves forward to the present. And you see people, you see these scenes where the wave is going through and people, like literally people are changing positions, people are changing what they look like. And then like there's this one business meeting and the guy says, okay, everybody check your devices, call your people, make sure everything's okay. And after a time, if something has changed, you start to forget what had happened, like what your life was before that change rippled forward. And the at the heart of it, it's not a time travel story. It's a love story. This couple was meant to be together. And even though these time changes keep happening, and there's a reason they keep happening and affecting this couple so badly, and I won't spoil it, but it's a wonderful, wonderful story.
And, God, it almost sounds like Outlander.
But better. And in a two-hour movie.
Well, I love Outlander.
Yeah.
I have to say, I do.
The reason that there are 50 books in that series and continuing I don't know how many books are in that series, but a lot of people love the love story in that too. Only nine, really? It seems like she's been writing it for longer than that.
The new one just came out, and a little fun factoid, my mom had a print shop back in the day and she was actually printing her stuff from when she was first starting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
No one never knew it would be this, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it's that love conquers all, even through time sort of story. It stars Leslie Odom Jr., Cynthia Erivo, what's his name? Legolas, Orlando Bloom.
Oh wow!
And it's called Needle in a Time Stack.
Okay.
And there's a short story by Robert Silverberg of the same name.
I'm always a sucker for, like, generally time travel movies to me are kind of you know, cliche and everything. And like the Avengers use of it was just a plot device, you know, let's put our fate on a rat.
And this is just, you know, time travel is just another piece of technology that exists in the world. And, you know, people who are ultra wealthy, it's like, you know, it's like the billionaires being able to travel into space now.
Right.
Instead they use technology, they travel back in time and watch themselves when they were 5 years old, you know?
But the spin to me is like this concept of like romance that there was always, no matter what, parallels, it was always meant to be. And I don't know, I'm a sucker for romance in a way that's not just filled with this typical tropes, you know, but
I think you'll like this one. I think you'll like this one a lot. It only came out, I think, back in October.
Okay.
So well, it's real.
It does sound interesting because I love Summer in Time. You know, I love, they use Rachman music in it, and it's just one of those, you know, Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour.
I will give you this hint. Pay attention to the musical clues, the musical cues in Needle in a Time Stack, because they will give you hints about stuff that refers backwards and forwards, and the set design and the costuming is to die for. It is luscious. It's futuristic without being futuristic, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get you. I'm definitely going to check it out. I just, and then I've said this before to Noah, but in this day and age with content, there's just too many avenues now, and everyone, it's like I get anxiety trying to figure something out. What am I going to watch? And it's crazy. The only shows that I actually actually actively watching, you know, new seasons is the Boys, which I actually love that series. This will be season 3. And of course, Outlander. And The Witcher. So, but there's just too much content right now that I just, like I said, so I'm actually been going backwards, watching a lot of documentaries. I watched the Get Back Beatles documentary from Peter Jackson, and it was it was really well done. So
I will say this once and never say it again. I absolutely despised, hate the Beatles.
It's okay.
Never play any of their music in my presence unless you want to get punched very, very hard.
I didn't think I'd ever met anybody that despised the Beatles.
Can I ask you?
I have Beatles trauma from high school. Okay,
that's okay. I mean, for me, I get it. It used to be this like little test, like, do you like the Stones or do you like the Beatles? You know, and it for me, they're just like, it's in my DNA, man.
I will take Iron Butterfly over the Beatles. Okay, every day of the year.
No, that's fair.
I'm just saying. No, I have trauma. I have not processed it. I probably never will process. All I will say is former flower children who are high school guitar teachers should not be permitted to force her students to play the Beatles every day for 4 years. You cannot do that to children, to teenagers. All right. It should be a gross violation of the GN convention to force high schoolers to play Rocky Effing Raccoon for a week. The hell is wrong with you, woman?
Yeah. Well,
like I said, I have Beatles trauma, and I'm still not done with it yet. But no, I will say this. It led me to playing classical guitar for 25 years so I could say, fuck you, Beatles.
Well, what I was going to say is the one thing that was interesting is that because Peter Jackson is this whole new avenue that he's been doing with documentary making, is he's taking old footage and, you know, making it acceptable in today's formats, like upscaling it and everything. And so so he did that with the World War One documentary that he made. And I just think it's interesting in taking old footage and, you know, scaling it and improving it. So it's actually something that can be watched under today's standards. And so,
so he really spent more of the time cleaning up the footage so it could be viewed pleasantly, so to speak, in a modern technological setting.
Well, and it was more or less because it was like they had a camera following them around during this time, and it was kind of putting it together because it was 150 hours plus of footage. And trying to put it into a you know, a format that can be watched and have like a front, middle, and end. So I think that's what he's done. And so I don't know. And again, if you don't like the Beatles, then you probably don't want to watch it.
No, I sprained my finger changing the radio station because this one station kept playing the ad for it over and over again. I'm like, stop. But no, it sounds like, you know, from a technological standpoint, like an accomplishment, but I find it hard to believe that 150 hours of Beatles footage had never been seen before this. I mean, with people's obsession with the Beatles, how did this never come out before?
I think it had to do with some legal reasons. But also just having the time to sit down and go through all that, it's kind of crazy. So he had to convince, you know, Paul and Yoko and Drink Ringo just to, that he could do it. So, but again, that's something that was, I picked up on, and it was on Disney Plus. And so, I am looking forward to The Boys season 3. But there's, you know, with new content out there.
Yeah, that's falling back to old stuff is becoming a habit, because I started rewatching Burn Notice just because I could.
So Summer, as far as the indie stuff, I guess I one thing I was expecting you were going to mention was Seance. So I think that's one you and I both reviewed.
Yeah, I liked Seance, but I thought Initiation was a better done movie. Seance had an emotional depth to it that I did not expect. But the story in Initiation, I thought, was just a little more immediate, for lack of a better word. But yes, I would say, if you're into those, knock them off one by one mysteries, definitely give Seance a look. If you're into campy monster movies, I just got Great White on Blu-ray. That movie's so ridiculous, but yeah, it's a shark movie. Of course I am going to watch it. But talking about, you know, revisiting old series, two collections I got on Blu-ray this year was Superman, the complete animated series, and Star Trek, the original four, the first four movies, Blu-ray and 4K as a collection. So in terms of revisiting old stuff, I hadn't remembered this Superman series. I remember, you know, Batman, the animated series. I remember Batman, Brave and the Bold. And I thought I knew what this animated series was. I'm like, wait, this is not the one I remember.
All right. But is this the one from the 1990s?
I think so.
It was like kind of the spinoff after Batman, the animated series was a big hit.
Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one, what I've seen of it. I think I've seen like the first six or eight episodes or something like that. But I really enjoyed as well.
If I remember, it went two full seasons.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I thought that was definitely, in fact, I thought that was possibly the best screen adaptation I've seen of Superman.
Really?
Just in terms of like, it really captured the spirit and feel of the comic books better than anything else I think I've seen done.
And if I remember correctly, this probably took place, you know, the storylines took place before they went darker in the comics with like Death of Superman and all that, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
You are bringing up, actually, I guess one other thing. I know we tried to get off of the superhero subject, but technically we could say 2021 was Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed.
It was one I was just hell bent. No way. Don't want to subject myself to this. I'm not, you know, I just you know, I saw what he did with Superman and, you know, Man of Steel, and then especially Batman versus Superman. And, but boy, I was just completely surprised once I sat down and actually started giving it a try. I couldn't believe how engrossed I got in it.
It makes me wish I'd never seen the Joss Whedon debacle one. It's the soul of it, like, and particularly the backstory of Cyborg, really.
Yes.
It really brought a lot of depth to it. And it's crazy that they ever just like looked at Joss's editions, like, oh yeah, this is what we're going to release. It's just horrendous.
Yeah.
It's even the color palette they used is messed up.
I don't think I realized how much Joss Whedon had redone that Snyder supposedly had already done. And I think that became more apparent with the reimagining. I don't know. Is there a better word for that? The reimagining of Justice League?
Repurposing.
Because it came out that he had to reshoot a lot of stuff too to get that movie to where he wanted it to be. And I wish I would watch a documentary of how much of the film he originally did, how much of that was changed by what Joss did, and how much he had to redo to go back to get his version again. I watched a 4-hour documentary about Nightmare on Elm Street. So yeah, I would watch a long documentary about the history of the making of the three Justice Leagues.
The problem is that the lawyers would have to say, we don't, you know, this doesn't represent Warner Brothers in a good light, or it doesn't represent Joss Whedon in a good, well, you know.
Yeah.
This is Warner Brothers we're talking about. They don't care if they're in a good light or not. They would make money because people want to watch it.
I think I would be more, that for sure, I would be all over that, because there's definitely some people who's, they're going to get their feelings hurt. But I, that's that shit. I'd read the book on that, because I mean, talk about a bad, bad, bad decision. I mean, and I hate to say this, but I think it kind of ruined Joss Whedon's career in some ways. I mean, he did it to himself, but being just a you know, things that he's done on his own. But talk about, do you think he's ever going to get hired again from a big scale right now? Because after that, I mean, you know, maybe he is. I mean, he's got his.
I don't know. I mean, after the first Avengers, I would have said that he had become untouchable. But after he did Age of Ultron, was it?
Yeah, but he really bucked heads with the studios over that, and they left. You know,
the studio should have put their foot down, because Age of Ultron was not fun. Not like the first one.
I wish they would just, the studios would stay out of it sometimes and just let the director go. Cause I don't know.
For me, it depends on the director, because somebody should have reined in George Lucas during the Star Wars prequels. I mean, seriously, really, dude. And maybe someone with a firmer grasp on reality would have told Ridley Scott, hey, The Last Duel, not a good story idea for right now, period. You know, this is directing Netflix or not at all. You know, somebody should have told him that.
I tried, and I love Ridley Scott, but sometimes I think, you know, he's 84 now. The fact that he's even producing movies is pretty remarkable. But I tried watching that, and it was just, first of all, I think Ben Affleck wrote the screenplay along with, yeah. And so why would you hire two American actors who can't even, that always bothers me when I see period pieces that they don't even like represent the period that's supposed to be. But yeah.
Yeah. When I read the story premise, I'm like, why would anybody in this modern age even give a damn about this story? I mean, there's not a compel. I mean, literally, it's a poorly told Rashomon.
and visually, I just can't believe that Ridley would have agreed to it, because it just, there's just like he mailed it in or something.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that got me was his arguments. Oh, millennials don't understand movies because they want to watch it on their phones, so that's why the box office is not good. I'm like, no, the box office is not good because people want to see Robin Hood. They don't want to see two guys fighting over who did what to who else's wife. And like, really? This is a story you thought would be a blockbuster? What's wrong with you? You saw what happened to the last Robin Hood, and that had Taron Egerton and Jamie Foxx in it, and it still couldn't do as well as it should have. But
and I still enjoyed that more than I did.
It's Robin Hood, man. You're always going to enjoy Robin Hood, even if it's a not quite well-executed Robin Hood. It's still Robin Hood, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, so I guess spinning since we went back to superheroes for that moment, I'll also throw out that I did enjoy WandaVision, that was another pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. That I had very low expectations going into it, and I did have to kind of struggle to get through the first few episodes, but once I saw what was going on and what they were doing, I actually did. That wound up being one of my favorites from 2021.
Well, I tried watching it, as I told you before, and it, not that it was a struggle for me to get through the first, but I was like, you know, I just don't care. I never thought I would say that. I just don't care.
Of the Disney Plus original series, the only one I really, really want to watch is Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and maybe Hawkeye. To see if they kill him or not.
I don't even see, but that doesn't. The only one that I'm interested in is speaking of Oscar Isaac, you know, being
Moon Knight.
But I am excited about Moon Knight.
Yes.
I kind of wish they'd have picked an actor that wasn't recognizable. But you know, Oscar Isaac is a great actor, and I think I'll be over that within a couple of minutes. I just hope they don't play too much on his schizophrenia. You know, that makes it into like the main topic as opposed to why he's doing what he's doing.
I just love the Twitter memes with Moon Knight calling Avengers headquarters looking for Dracula. Where's my money?
And I'll throw in one last series I watched, which I think will help us segue into video games as well. On Netflix, the animated series Dota: Dragon's Blood. That was one that was just such a pleasant surprise for me as somebody who just loves like the world of Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games and things like that. And it seems like it's just so rare that something like that is successfully translated onto the screen. Hmm. Really, this was like the first thing that I could think of since the mid-1990s when Japan got this Japanese animated series, The Record of the Lotus Wars. And, you know, that one really was just like somebody's role-playing game campaign got successfully put onto the screen in an animated show. And I don't think I've seen anything quite like it since up until just this with this Dota Dragon's Blood series. Now apparently it's based on a video game RPG as opposed to a tabletop RPG, so maybe one of you can educate me a bit more about the source that it's coming from. Yeah. But in terms of just watching something that's like a screen adaptation of a good role-playing game campaign, I was really pleasantly impressed to just see something that's just straight fantasy, unabashed, no trying to be like, you know, laughing at it and, you know, putting it on there like, isn't it stupid that people think stuff like this is cool? Like, it's just straight up fantasy. For like, if you like fantasy, here it is. It's a fun fantasy show. And so that was a real a really nice surprise for me this year was that one. Cool. You go to Dragon's Blood.
You mean you didn't watch the new Mortal Kombat that just came out this year?
I did miss that one.
The original
one was a fun, campy watch.
It was. I actually was casual friends with some of the background martial artists who died horribly. So in the first one.
you know, it's funny. And I was talking to Noah, we were recently, about just video game movies and how they're just not very many that are good. And it was like the one that was always the best of them was the original Mortal Kombat. And that's like really sad when you think about it.
Because
there's like I liked the Castlevania on Netflix. I thought that was pretty well done. But again, it's Castlevania isn't played for it's. Anyway, it's
was there an animated adaptation of was it Wolfenstein, Castle Wolfenstein?
No, but that would be really cool. That would be really cool. I mean, they've recently came out with the Wolfenstein games, and it's been pretty good. Those were always a fun romp, you know. But yeah, I mean, I know that they're coming out with Uncharted in January. Yes. And I have really no desire to see that, only because the casting was like the kid that plays Spider-Man. What the heck's his name again?
Tom Holland.
I mean, really? Nathan Drake is like, he's not. Anyway, it was bad casting.
I don't think it was bad casting. I just thought it was poorly timed casting because, what was it, Nathan Fillion paid.
I would love
an Uncharted short film that he starred in. Did you see that?
I did, and I thought he would be great in that role.
Yes.
I thought he was great, and he's got this, because I don't know if you've ever played Uncharted games. He's kind of a arrogant, cocky, but funny in a self. Anyway, he's very.
Captain Hammer.
Yeah, and so exactly, and Nathan fills that bill to a T, and they missed their opportunity, man. Because I think Nathan's that weird actor. He can bridge the gap between the nerds and the, you know what I mean. Mm. He's got the only
upside I see of casting Tom Holland is so that he can do 5 or 6 or 8 Uncharted movies after he's done being Spider-Man. That's it.
Yeah, but
he's young enough to get that done.
Yeah, well, Mark Wahlberg as Sully is terrible, man. If you play the game, Sully is this older, like father-like figure, and I know why they did it. They're just doing it but come on, man. And Mark Wahlberg when he played Max Payne was flipping awful. Mm. And I'm one of these suckers that tries to find redeeming values in video game movies. And I've since given up, you know, even watching the terrible, like, Blood Rain movies that was from Uli Roth.
Uwe Boll.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
And he's done, I've sat through those Blood Rain, Far Cry. I mean, they're horrible. So I can appreciate, it's like there's this running joke, like, are we finally going to get a video game movie that's actually decent? And I don't think I've seen it yet, you know, but it was interesting, you know.
Well, as I say, you got a good series with this Dota Dragon's Blood. Are you familiar with the source on that? Like either of you?
I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not. And to be honest with you, there's so many like JRPG games that are really from Japan that are popular, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like exclusive to the Sony, but I'm not familiar with it, but I am going to look it up after this discussion, just because I'm interested. Uh-huh. I mean, I've been like, what, just talking about cinema and how it's representing itself. I've seen with video games, like this growth now, it's more about not just gaming anymore. It's a full cinematic experience, you know?
That's what I kind of wanted to ask. Is there anything that you played this year that came out this year that you think would translate well?
Yes.
Like the story is strong enough that it would translate well to a movie. And could you name some, you know,
Well, for me, and technically this came out in 2020, but I've played it twice now. It's called The Ghosts of Tsushima.
Yes, I've heard of
takes,
that one.
It takes place on the island of Tsushima, and it's actually kind of mirrored to the real story of when the Mongolian Empire, ideally, you know, Kublai Khan was, I think, Genghis Khan's son. But anyway, he was cousin of this, like, I mean, he's trying to, obviously, that when they tried to conquer Japan and they first conquered Tsushima. So you play this character, Jen, and it's like you start off and you basically try to fight all these Mongolian, you know, they're raping and pillaging the land, and you acquire skill sets and along the way. And it's just a really engaging game because it really kind of leans itself to the historical aspects of it. But a lot of it's obviously, you know, fictitious, but there's like this, you know, this proxy. So you're like knowing that there's based on some realities of what really happened, you know, and you, I just found it so engaging and so well fleshed out. It was like 40, 50 hours of gameplay. And so I think that would be really, you know, just a well done movie because it's got some historical connections to it. And who doesn't love a Ronan movie, you know, like this, he's been outcast from his clan because he doesn't follow the code. You know, he kills, you know, you're not supposed to, he kills unethically. Like he sneaks up on people. Well, that's not supposed to be, that's not the code. You know, you're supposed to face your opponent. And by God, if you sneak up behind him and kill him, you're no longer, you know, that's not the way. And so he adapts this kind of way to fight because that's the only way he can get through to the, to survive. So you play the, you know, these situations where you sneak up on people and slice their throat, you know, slice their throats, you know, if that would not be the way, you know? And so I just was, that game was so great from a visual standpoint, and it had a really deep cinematic value. So that for sure would be one. I believe it was like game of the year, that against The Last of Us too. But anyway, that was great. Another one I played that could be a great movie, it's called Cyberpunk 2077. And
so did they get that one working? I remember that being like, you know, considered like this huge fiasco when it came out. And
it still is, to be honest with you. I played it with bugs and all, and I was like one of the few that actually stuck it out to the end, you know? And it was great. The bugs were can be really frustrating with, and some of them game breaking, you know. Actually, I ended up getting one of my Xboxes bricked from it.
Ooh.
Yeah, it actually bricked my Xbox.
I'm sorry, what does that mean?
It died. My Xbox died. Oh. So
yeah, it's like wow. When a phone gets bricked, it gets totally locked up, seized up. I guess it's the digital version of an aneurysm or a stroke, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. You know, and again, I was looking it up, and like I was on a lot of the group discussions, and there were other people like, hey, it happened to me, and this whole, but there's no way to prove it. But I was right in the middle of playing that game, and like I can't even power it up anymore, so that was dead. So I eventually got the new generation of systems, Xbox X, and I started playing it again with my fingers crossed, of course. I was able to play through it all and finish it, but. I don't know. It's just kind of a neat premises. You know, you play like a net runner and you can decide if you want to be a nomad, and you have these various categories, and you're fighting this Arasaka, this Japanese, you know, mafia type organization that's got money embedded in everything, politicians and everything. And of course you have this character called Johnny Silverhand that's played by Keanu Reeves. And it's like, good fashion, you know, I don't know. It's trying to do a lot of things, but I think it would be a really cool, like cyberpunk type, like Blade Runner type movie, you know, with very atmospheric. And I had a lot of fun with it. You know, there's a lot of side quest missions and everything, but you know, I know that it's still in the press. I mean, the company that made it, CD Projekt, there were people that left the company, people got fired over it. I know that they lost money on it, so it's kind of sad. There was so much put into that. It was supposed to be game of the year, and then it ended up like faltering. And I think there's lawsuits against the company right now over it. Wow. So, but yeah, I stuck it through because I was like one of those that was buying and drinking the Kool-Aid all the way leading up to it. Like, oh my God, this is going to be great. You know, who doesn't love a good cyberpunk video game? And I was remember playing it just kind of like biting my tongue. Oh my God, why does this suck? You know, but I eventually got through it. And once you did, it was worth it I loved it. So, yeah. But you know, it's like one of those things where you have to like spend some time with it, and I hope it gets better than this. It happens a lot in gaming where a lot of there's so much like hype into something and then it ends up becoming just nothing but a bust. And so, nowadays the games are like $100 million generally just to create a video game. And so it's a lot of, you'll see a company go out of business when it doesn't make its numbers. So it's a lot of pressure. So, but those are the two games for sure. I mean, I went backwards and I've been playing old games. It's kind of similar to how we're talking about old content. Like I went back and there was a series, that of course Max Payne, I love those, they're fun. And there was another game series called Fear, and there was like 1, 2, and 3, and those are great, where you like has a bullet time, you can slow down time, and it's very paranormal driven, so I've had fun with that. But too much time and too little time,
too much content.
And as I'm talking to you right now, actually, just to interrupt you, but the new Halo game was released tonight. And so when I get off that, I'm going to be jumping on and playing, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, Halo Infinite. I can't wait.
Nice. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just curious. Are you at all interested or excited that they've announced this Halo series coming to Hulu?
Could
you care less?
I'm interested. I need to see, like, are they going to do Cortana before rampancy? Because I don't know if you know the story, but she suddenly, as an AI, she got rampancy, which meant that the life of AIs, they will die. And they basically, I don't want to spoil anything, but became omnipresent almost, you know, and it was like, became a bad, the antagonist. And it was like, you can't do that to Cortana. So I hope they stay to the true story, because a lot of true Halo fans were upset about that. And that was in Halo 5. They just took a big shit on the franchise, which is why the new one came out now. It's supposed to be back to Master Chief and his, you know, so we'll see. I may come back later and like, it sucked, man. But yeah, I'm generally excited about it. And I remember when they originally talked about Halo, it was, I believe, Ridley Scott was supposed to be taking a crack at it. Initially at the beginning. And I don't know if you remember, you know, the director that did Project Nine, or, you know, the space movie that, or the takes place in South Africa with all the aliens. What was that called?
Neil Blomkamp.
Yeah, District 9.
Neil Blomkamp. He did a Halo. If you can find it on YouTube, I believe he did a bunch of small films about using, you know, Halo. And it was amazing. I don't know if they're still available, but he did his own versions of them. And I thought, you know, God, that would be great to incorporate his vision of it in there, because it was raw. You should check it out. It's actually good. So, but I don't know. I haven't looked enough as who's going to be shooting it. Regardless, it's got to have a big budget, because you can't do Halo without having proper CGI, you know?
Mm. But I was, in terms of game adaptations, I didn't play The Last of Us, but I read a lot about it, and I read a lot of people whose opinions I value, and they loved it. And the fact that it's being adapted for a TV series on HBO by the same team that did the Chernobyl miniseries, that has me excited, because that Chernobyl miniseries was stunning and brutal.
Well, I'll tell you this about The Last of Us. The Last of Us, the first one, is one of my favorite games of all time. And this is where there's like a division of either like it or you don't. I am not happy with what they did with Joel. And so I don't want to give away anything. There was something endearing about that relationship, you know, father, daughter, you know, and just, there was something deeper there, and I wanted it to be explored a little more. And it was like, just as we're getting that exploration, Because, you know, she's older now and she's
coming. You're talking about Last of Us 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that was really, and the way they did it, it was just, it was a big fuck you to the fans of Joel, the character. And I don't know, it was tough. You would never do that to Lara Croft. And so I had a real problem with that, with, you know, the choice that was made. Neil Druckmann, I call him Neil Fuckman because I was so pissed off about it. And I played it, and visually it had, but it seemed like it was less about the zombies and less about the, or what you would call them, the clickers and stuff. Then it was more about this, like, breaking barriers and trying to, like, I don't know. It just seemed more like performance art than it did the story. And it was, there were some great moments in it. Don't get me wrong. Like, there were some great moments of, like, it's a zombie game in the end, you know, and that's what I want. And so,
yeah,
but.
Well, we shall see what happens with, I don't know if they're going to do all the games or just the first game. I don't know the details yet. All I know is it's been shooting in Canada for the past few months.
Mm.
So we'll see.
It gives me excited because I absolutely love Chernobyl, that series. I thought it was well done. So, you know, maybe we'll see a change in the trend of video game movies, you know, sucking.
Well, you know,
it'd be about time.
Yeah. I mean, putting it in a 6 or 8 hour miniseries instead of trying to squeeze it into a 2 hour movie, maybe that's the missing key. I want to wrap up.
Yeah, I do too.
With just mentioning the reference books and new ships that have come out from Hero Collector this year. The Galaxy Quest, The Inside Story, is a delightful book. The book on James Bond's DB5 is basically Aston Martin DB5 porn. There's no other way to describe it. The pictures, high resolution coffee table. This is a huge book. And if you're a fan of James Bond's DB5, you will cuddle up at night with this book just to be close to it as often as possible. And their entire series on designing spaceships, both the Star Trek ones and the new Battlestar Galactica ones, are, if you are a fan of space opera and the spaceships you have seen in the TV shows that you enjoy and adore, this book is right up your alley. Or actually, I should say this series of books. And for those who are Star Trek fans, Hero Collector is expanding their hand-painted die-cast models yet again. Brand new ships. NCC 1701D, the Enterprise, a new Defiant, a new original Enterprise 1701, a new Voyager, and a new Enterprise NX-01. So if you go to Hero Collector's website, actually, I think the ships you can view at the Eagle Moss shop website, which you can link to from Hero Collector. The ships are gorgeous, and I really hope that someday they bring the original series Galactica model and the original series Viper back into production, because I missed them when they were first out and I want them. I want them now. Just saying.
How much is that going to cost?
They run about $60 to $80 a piece, depending on the size of it, but they're die cast, they're hand painted, and they're absolute, you know, fan approved, loving detail.
Limited quantity, I imagine, too.
I don't know. Some of the later ships are still there. They still have, they have the Rocinante from the Expanse that's still there. So yeah, but I want the original Galactica and the original Viper.
It's funny still... as we get older, the things that we aspire, the things that we want to buy and collect. It's... Mm-hmm.
Hey, I used to have the Viper and the Cylon Raider, the plastic ones that actually shot the little.
That's a collector item, by the way.
That's why I sold them on eBay.
Oh, God. Because I remember like I had it too, but my mom sold it at a garage sale, but because kids got hurt with it. Mm-hmm.
Kids were swallowing the little torpedo shots.
Yeah, remember
they would launch.
Also, the original Boba Fett that Kenner made with Star Wars, his rocket had a little, it would shoot out and they'd stop that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I wish I still had some of those Galactica models because I do still have I had the one that shot and the one that didn't. So I had them both.
Oh, wow.
And I said, and when I saw how much the ones that were shooting were going for on eBay, I'm like, I will get on that train. And I even for like the you know, remember the small figurines?
I do. I still have a Cylon actually.
I could never find the gold Cylon, but I had, there was a light colored Daggett and a dark colored Daggett, and I had them both.
Wow. I just had the standards, you know, the standard issue silver.
But I think the light colored Daggett was like a printing mistake or something, but I had them both. I had them both just because I could.
Should I still hold those? Oof.
I don't know where they are. I hope they're in my storage locker.
Yeah.
Keyword, I hope. But yeah, that's the Hero Collector stuff is well worth having. Those books are just lovely. If you're into reference books for the TV shows, if you're a James Bond collector or a Star Trek fan, the Shipyards books, the designing spaceships books are truly geek heaven. So I recommend those. But I think we've covered all of the stuff we've enjoyed in 2021 pretty solidly.
It'll be interesting in 2022 if we get back to, like you said earlier, about theaters and or even caring.
I know I have definitely gotten more more picky and choosy about what I want to watch. You know, I'm not in a hurry to watch the superhero movies anymore. I'm not in a hurry to watch all of the tentpole movies that come out. Just, you know, for the record, Matrix Resurrections, I'm not in a hurry for. Just Another saying.
Yeah. The only one that matters is the first Matrix. Yep. I'm sorry.
It's the first one.
Yeah.
I beg to disagree. I think the Animatrix.
Okay, the Animatrix.
Animatrix kind of counts, but I'm sitting, you know, I'm hoping the Matrix doesn't slide into that Highlander territory. There should have been only one.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But Noah, Darren, thank you for sharing your insights and your passions for 2021 content and before and beyond with us today.
All right. It was fun. Thank you, Summer.
And since we've been going so long, that's it. We're gonna end the show right here. If you have any questions or comments about our list or some things to add from your own, call in. The number is 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving us a review or a rating. Let people know you are enjoying the show, and folks should come on over and check it out for themselves. You can start up a conversation with us on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi, and yes, I will get into conversations much like we had in this very episode. Twitter's a weakness. I realize that. But you know what? I'm still having fun with it. You can also comment over on the website, sliceofscifi.com. I really do want to thank everyone who has supported Slice of Sci-Fi over the years. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal, your donations through Ko-fi help keep the lights on around here. And this year helped us get a better server. So thank you all for your support. It truly is appreciated. I really couldn't support all of this without your help. So again, my gratitude to you all. If you would like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will be eligible for perks, books, DVDs, Blu-rays, all sorts of prizes handed out to the supporters who help keep this train going. I'm still figuring out how to add the coffee donations into that loop. The place to go for coffee donation is coffee.com/sliceofsci-fi. That's ko-fi.com. And of course, there's the PayPal link for those more inclined to do a donation every now and then. That link is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. But that will do it for this episode and for 2021. Thank you all for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi in the new year. 2022 is shaping up to be interesting in terms of more content across more platforms. Yet again, stuff to be explored at Hulu, at Netflix, at Apple TV, at IMDb TV, all sorts of manner of TV shows, movies. And yes, I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into some graphic novels because I've caught the bug again and I don't know what to do about it other than to read more graphic novels. Oh, there you have it. But we will see you next time. Take care.